So, hi to everyone. The title of the talk is non-perturbative effects on cerebellum brains, and is roughly based on a paper that I wrote with Luca Martucci last year, and I gave an also different talk in Munich a couple of months ago, so I apologize for those who were in the audience and already heard this talk before, particularly to Emilian, heard that twice. Hopefully the Blackboard format will add something to this topic and hopefully trigger the discussion as well.
Have to keep hearing before something sinks in, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a good strategy, actually. So since yesterday we have the talk from Tyson on guts from strings, and in particular the F theory viewpoint, I'm going to pick that scenario and use it as a motivation for the talk today. Although, well, as you will see, the points I'm going to make are more general than F-theory, but they turn interesting, particularly interesting in the F-theory context. So again, the motivation will be the local, well, or if you want, not even local, the theory, F-theory model. And, well, in order to summarize what it was put down here in the blackboard yesterday, let's say for these local models, we have the following picture. So we have a gut cage group that will be localized on a four-cycle, some internal dimension is in our osteo compactification, which is naturally embedded in some free-fall or six-dimensional base, and then here lives the gut cage group. Now, since we want to have chiral matter, we have some seven brains that, well, and this is seven brain, let's call it with SU5, SU6, or whatever. And then we have some non-compact D7 brain that intersect this fourth cycle in a Riemann surface, and here lives the chiral matter, okay? So, and when we have three of these Riemann surfaces that intersect and points, then there will be a Yukawa coupling. Okay, that's the rough picture I just want to start with, and well, very simple, and it's the basic, like say, picture of this local F theory business. So for instance, well, when you have this gut construction, if your group is SU5, you will have, let's say, the usual SU5 Yukawa couplings that you can get in F-theory in a nice way. That's why we all turn to F-theory. The M-theory thing is started, because you can have these Yukawa couplings and you don't need non-perturbative effects to get them. You will break this gut cage group with a U1 with a flux for the generator of the hypercharge in the internal dimensions, and then you will break to MSSM or standard model gauge group, and this will go to the Yukawas of the MSSM. Now, for the purpose of this talk, let's say that I am still here and I just want to look how these Yukawas look like. Okay? So this breaking will come afterwards, but once that you have this with nice values, the rest more or less comes automatically. A very important thing, of course, is that the splitting that you're going to have in the MSSM depends on the hypercharge, and then you want something that you want the wave functions, I mean, you want the Yukawa coupling, this breaking, to depend non-trivially on the hypercharge. But, well, let's just focus on this for the very beginning, and then let's worry about the breaking later. So, at the level of the gut gauge group, the computation of the holomorphic piece of the Yukawa couplings, so it's a superpotential term, comes as follows. You have this four-dimensional, eight-dimensional Trans-Simons action that you reduce in four dimensions to get a four-dimensional thing. Okay, and from here the Yukawa couplings are supposed to come from, in particular from this trilinear piece. Okay. So from here, just like in the adiabatic, where you have a similar kind of coupling, you will get the Yukawa couplings. In particular, you can expand things in superfields. And then you will get something like this, right? You get this kind of integral, which is nothing but the overlap of the wave functions. You solve the wave function equation of motion, you plug it here, and you should get some result for your Yukawa coupling. Now, as we were told yesterday, when you solve the equation of motions, you will usually find an exponential falloff for these wave functions. When you introduce the fact that these things come from certain bands which are intersecting. And then if I represent the curve like this, all the interesting part of the integral will come in a region near the triple intersection. And this is very good for the local philosophy of these models, because it means that I don't really need to know the full embedding of these Riemann surfaces in the device or in the four cycle. I just need to know the local geometry near this triple intersection. Okay.
Can I ask you another naive question? Of course, you can get your Yukawa couplings by not intersecting brains, but putting enough flux, right, on a single Ideal picture of that.
Yeah, you can get more things, but and that was the approach of the initial papers, that people say, well, we could have a chiral matter in the bulk, and then it can have with some intersection and so on. But then at some point it became clear that if you want to have a nice hierarchy of Yukawa couplings, as the picture I'm going to develop now, the best is this picture. And also there were some other phenomenological bias statements that went to this. This is not the only way of creating Yukawas, but at some point people turned to this one just because.
Isn't it also like in the bulk, basically on the Elpezos, you have like lots of vanishing theorems, so you wouldn't really.
But I think that was fully in the bulk, right? I think that was no intersection at all. I mean, you could have intersection and bulk and like a mixed scenario, but that was put into the trash at some point. And yeah, it happened so quickly that I forgot actually these things. I mean, you get 200 pages one day, and then well, there are lots of results that you cannot absorb.
Yeah, but when you do global embeddings, you make sure now that examples of these other hybrid types, or you know, fewer intersections, more flux, happen to be easier.
Well, yeah. But okay, so I am going to give you. It will not be fully clear for this talk, but I'm going to give you a posteriori motivation for this particular setup. And well, I mean, Well, we have many experts, so if anybody wants to say anything, I basically, I know that at some point this triple thing became the most interesting, not only for the vanishing, but some for the constraints, but I don't recall exactly why.
Yeah. So that we can calculate your Kron matrix from a single, well, for example, E6 or D6 type singularity point. But in Lorentz effective theory, we need to look at your Kron couplings, which have contributions from all sorts of E6 or D6 type points available in the Kron divisor.
Yeah.
Because we only look at the Lorentz effective theory.
Yes.
So isn't it more important to look at the contributions from different singularity points rather than looking at the more detailed structure? But certainly it is also important to look at the detailed structure of the Kron matrix from a given singularity point.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it much more important to look at all contributions? And in that situation, well, it does matter, I think, how the Riemann surface is embedded in the Kron divisor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good.
So certainly, studying the detailed structure of the Kron matrix from a given singularity point, then we don't really have to know how the Riemann surface is embedded in the Kron divisor.
Okay.
Ultimately, what we need to know is the Kron matrix in a Lorentz effective theory. So that's a long distance thing. So eventually, we have to sum up all the.
But you're talking about the physical Yukawas?
Yeah.
Okay.
The distinction between Kera and Super is not very important.
Okay.
But we have to go to long distance, way below the energy scale, the Kat scale. Then we have to sum up all the contributions from the Kat divisor. Not just look at the Kron matrix from a given singularity point of experiment.
Mm-hmm. But then you would agree that as a working assumption, I could say, well, I assume that there are no more contributions, which may be, I mean, easy to implement or not, or you would say that.
So if there's only one, well, E6 type point to D6 type point available in the Kron divisor, mm-hmm. then that's going to be the only contribution. Mm-hmm. So that's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the picture that I want to push for reasons that will come clear shortly. So if you want, I'm having a lot of working assumptions that I'm not telling you, but they will become clear shortly.
Just to follow up, this is based on your argument that actually you cannot, in this context, generally get different scales between the size of divisors versus the size of the base, and that's based on that, because if you have more intersections and you don't have hierarchy between divisor radius and base radius, all contributions become important. Is that what you're saying, basically?
No, that's another issue.
Okay. There are many 6 points, so that's what you're saying.
I understand. Yes.
But if they are not that far apart in the language of the base, right? They all contribute. Otherwise, you think that maybe some...
They all contribute anyway, right?
Yeah.
Because in four dimensions, they all give contribution. Yeah.
Okay, well, let me push this local picture a little bit further, and I mean we can come back to this issue.
Another thing also, Naeem.
Oh, okay.
You're forced to intersect at a point. Is that group theory argument?
This is group theory argument. I think it's not so much forcing. I think they're happy to do it. No, this exceptional group theory allows you to do this in a kind of a natural way.
What is the argument?
Triple intersection versus double intersection.
Triple intersection is just a rank 4 projection.
Mm.
So it's actually a time to be effect. So if you have a 5D7 brain, and if you have a rank 4 7 plane, and if you have an extra D7 brain, and then you always have an extra mirror image coming there. And that makes you this triple intersection at a D6 type point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just time to be found.
It's D6.
D6.
Well, that's very neat instant transfer.
Right?
Very neat instant
transfer. Yeah, but the triple intersection fact, whether it's working for the GATT model building or not, I mean, you can get it in a theory, but just self-intersection of 7 brains in Orient 4, right? That's what you're saying.
Well, don't have to cover that.
I mean, in a theory, we'll have even more examples than that, but that's one that is also realized in perturbative type 2B. Okay, so let me proceed, and then let's just write down a very simple toy model for this triple intersection, which we are just in the complex plane C1, C2, and then which one curves looks like, I just basically modelize my 4-cycle by these two complex coordinates, and then I have 3 curves, that looks like this. Okay? And then the exponential falloff that I was telling you about translate in this measure here to have incorporated an exponential falloff. It looks like this. Okay, it's just like the product of the exponential falloffs. And then the interesting thing is that you have an U1 symmetry of this measure that, before you ask me, I have no interpretation for it, which just basically amounts to rotate the two complex coordinates by the same face. Okay, this doesn't change, which means that this, in order to have an unvanishing contribution to Yukawa, should also be non-vanishing under this global U1 symmetry. Okay, everything that you compute, that you multiply, and is not invariant under this, then it will not contribute to Yukawa's. Okay. Well, and here comes the thing why I'm focusing on this particular setup. Basically, when you solve the equation of motion, the Dirac equation for these wave functions, you get something like this. Which is one holomorphic function another holomorphic function and some general function. And this ij here, they represent the families. I am assuming that I have several zero modes in these curves, then that can be computed directly by the index of the flux in this curve. And yeah, and later on I'm going to assume that all the three families of the MSSM or the cat group are in this, meet in this triple intersection, so they are in these three curves. Okay, so you have something like that, and then since these people are going to be holomorphic, you can basically, and following this local philosophy, you can just look at the behavior near the intersection and take a basis. Imagine you have three families. You will take a basis that look like this. Okay? And then this guy, we don't know. It basically depends on the details of the model, the flux, this intersection, everything. Okay, so this is the thing, and this is what needs to be U1 invariant. Okay? Otherwise it will vanish. So if this guy is a constant, let's put it. It is clear that unless I equals to J equals to 3, the Yukawas will be vanishing, okay? So only if, I don't know, only if I pick 1 and 1 here, this integrand will be invariant under the U1 symmetry, and then there will be no cancellation upon integration. If I put C1, C2 squared, this is just not invariant under this U1 symmetry. Now, this G equals to constants need not necessarily be the case, it just needs to be real. Or maybe not even that. Well, but then one can just complicate this toy model and take the case where the fluxes, assume you're in flat space, and the fluxes, that the world volume fluxes that create chirality in your curves, they are constant. Then one turns the crank, and then G is non-constant, but it's just a function of C1 squared and C2 squared. And so again, since this guy is by itself invariant under the U1 symmetry, the product of these two people need to be invariant under the U1 symmetry, and we go back to the same problem. So only one Yukawa coupling is different from zero, and all the rest are equal to zero. And this is what is called the rank one problem. Now, what is it a problem? I haven't said yet, because in general, these are very, very specific results. I could have a generic G. Actually, that was the hope at the beginning when all this came about, and it was kind of an interesting scenario. I mean, it was if one has a general gene, then one would expect that when you Taylor expand this G, you will have things like, well, I don't know, C1 to something, C2 to something, this is U1 invariant, but then you will start pulling down some terms which are not U1 invariant. Like this, and this will contribute to the Yukawa IJ. Okay? Now, since this comes from a Taylor expansion, it will be naturally suppressed. And then you will have something that at zero order in Taylor expansion looks like rank one, and then when you add corrections that are suppressed, it becomes, you start going away from the rank one. And in this way, the well, that was the proposal of Heckman and Baffa. 0.8, and they wanted to create a hierarchy of flavors via this mechanism. Okay? Just having rank one at zero order in some expansion, and then going in the expansion and contributing to the other terms in the Yukawa matrix, the other entries in the Yukawa matrix.
Trivial question. This is only about the down type quarks, right?
Say it again?
This is only about the down type quarks, Yukawa couplings.
Oh! You're going to talk about monodromies here?
No. The only thing I want to know is whether this is also
general. In principle, it's general, because they both come from a triple intersection. Right? Everything in this setup, everything comes from a triple intersection. I mean, I just have one, but there will be another one. This is here involving HD, let's say, but I will have another one which is involving HU, and in principle, the idea.
Is that similar to the triple intersection picture is not actually precise?
The what?
The triple intersection picture is not that precise. Well, the more precise description should involve rank two Higgs bundle locally.
But this E8 super singularity does not include the triple intersections?
I'm talking about E8 rather than E6. That's another problem.
Why?
Was for E6 singularity, the picture that I have, if I'm talking about the uptype you cover from the given E6 type singularity point, then there's a problem. And then what we need is a rank 2 Higgs bundle and a doublet zero mode solution for 10 representation field. And yet, presumably the argument will proceed roughly in the same way, mm-hmm. but the essential part of the argument by Heckman-Baffa is that the wave function falls off sufficiently rapidly, like exponentially. Mm-hmm. And that's a crucial part. And for the wave function of zero modes for 10 representation around the E6 type point, mm-hmm. is known to have exponential fall off in certain simplified solution.
Okay, so here what you are questioning is whether this assumption of a quickly exponential fall off that allows me to compute the Yukawa coupling just for the
E6 type point.
It's valid or not.
It has not been verified completely yet, but I think that would be a very safe assumption.
I think it is, for what I'm going to say next, about the exponential falloff.
So, for under that assumption, I think the same statement will follow for the fixed point as well. Mm.
Okay. So, the conclusion is tricky, but it works. Huh?
Mm. Exactly.
Okay, good. Well, that was the picture they had in mind. This G general will have contributions at high orders in the expansion. But then, in a later paper by Heckman, Baffa, and two more authors, this Cecotti et al. Paper, they realize that all these contributions cancel out. Okay, so when I was writing here, this triple overlap, actually I was simplifying. You have like different, you have a sum of triple intersection, overlap, triple overlap of weak functions. And well, individually these things are non-zero from this point of view, but when you add up all of them, they vanish. Well, they have a beautiful proof of this thing. Basically, what they say is when I compute the wave functions, the Dirac equation, I can understand them in the certain way. I have, for this setup, I have two sets of supersymmetry equations, the F term and the D term equations. This is basically F2, 0 equals 0, and this is F where J equals to 0, right? You don't know these things. And I can just take this thing and expand it in fluctuations, and from this expansion, when I look at linear order, I will get the wave function equation. And then say, well, if I organize my equation of motion for the wave function in this way, only the ones coming from here will contribute to the Yukawa couplings, to the holomorphic Yukawa couplings, which makes sense because it's something that has to do with the superpotential. Well, this one is irrelevant. Actually, they built up like a vector of wave functions, and I say I have the F term equation looks like this, like some operator, like differential operator, and or if you want in the RAM language will be something like this, and the D term equation looks like this. So F term equation runs to exact vector of wave functions, D term to coexact. And this is irrelevant, includes the metric, and it does not contribute to the holomorphic Yukawa coupling. So you can take, if you impose these two things, you are asking your vector of wave functions to be harmonic in some sense. If you just impose this one, you can take your vector to be closed, and you can move in the cohomology class of these wave functions. You have more freedom. You have more freedom to compute the Yukawa couplings, and you know that the result for the holomorphic Yukawas will not change. Okay, so this statement you can compute to go into a particular representative of some cohomology class. And one particular representative is a guy which is a delta function. This delta function localized here. And so this exponential follow-up, you can do it extremely. Basically, here, you can take this m to be as big as you want. And so the exponential follow-up becomes a delta function, and then you can do this this thing quite precise. So this is this mathematical picture that they have, and it's quite powerful in this sense. And that's why I believe that what you were saying is essentially true. I mean, things look tricky, but it has to be like this just because of this comment. Okay, good.
Wasn't that the similar, just to try to remember, was that the similar paper by Joe?
No, he imposed F term and D term. He was not talking about this.
But I thought he was also saying that.
Okay, so he came to the same conclusion, but this cohomology structure, it was not in that paper, it was in the previous paper by Chicotti et al.
So then he had a different argument, right?
Well, they did things more careful, I think, and they imposed F term and D term, but they always work in, let's say they work with harmonic representative in this language. What these people, they could take the representative that it was more convenient for doing the computation.
Just an evaluation at the critical locus. I mean, couldn't it be that you have some higher order terms which give rise to your Yukawa couplings?
Higher order terms?
It's not surprising that the superpotential vanishes.
No. What do you mean the superpotential vanishes? The superpotential does not vanish. It's just round one.
If I take a look at your equation over there, you say F 0, 2 is 0.
Yeah, right. I mean, but okay, good. Because I am not expanding in fields here, but I will have something that is phi I, phi j, phi k, and the BEF of this guy vanish, and so superpotential vanish on shell if you want, but you still have a superpotential, like the superpotential for n equals to 4, right, usually.
But then what does the statement in there, what does this prove?
Oh, okay. The statement is that, the statement is that if, usually I can compute a wave function equation for my fluctuations, okay? And from what these people did, you can understand this wave function equation, that this is a system of linear equations, as
for a supersymmetric vacuum, you're computing the wave functions or not?
Well, it's I can do it off shell as well, right? Yeah, for a supersymmetric vacuum, it's going. I mean, the FTM equations, they are defined off shell, no? And so the only thing that I'm doing here is I am, okay, so let me do it. This means FMN equals to, okay, so from FMN, let's say you will have a BEV value of FMN, and then you will have the fluctuations that look like something like this. Right? So when you understand this as a fluctuation of your field, then you can understand that FMN equals to zero and some Dirac equation on your field. Something like that, and desymmetrized. And that's what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is that this is part of the equation of motion for the fluctuation of the gauge field. There will be some others that come from here, which basically are the AM bar, something like this. And these are not relevant when you want to compute the holomorphic decoupling coupling, which makes sense because this is a real equation and this is holomorphic. So it would be very bad if holomorphic decoupling depends on real equation. Okay? Well, this is quite cute. I mean, I recommend if anyone is interested to look at it. So, anyone else? Okay, so let me... Oh, hello. Let me do some recap. So the recap is, I assume this FDRD local GAT framework, and then I assume that I have three generations on, they all come from the same curve inside the divisor. That's one of the assumptions. And then I get the rank in one power. Okay? And then the idea is that, well, we need a mechanism that takes us away from the situation, not too much because you want to have a perturbation, but something that takes you away. I mean, this is a good starting point and it's a hierarchy between flavors, but there's too much hierarchy. So we need a deformation of the superpotential, this one, that not trivially affects this round one result. Now, the result of the Scotti et al., you can summarize by saying that this is zero if you are just looking at the elements that you have in your gut gauge theories. From S4 elements, which is fluxes, or volume fluxes, intersection, and so on, you will not change this. That's what they are saying. So we need some external effect. Okay? So in that same paper, they went for proposing an external effect that could do the job. And, well, they came for the proposal from having G3 fluxes that would modify this theory, and then, well, they will create this deformation, and actually they encode all this perturbation of the superpotential by a non-commutative deformation. Okay, so that's the situation. And then the plan here is to say that two things, two basic things. One, show that the that this this perturbation exists, and it comes from non-perturbative effects. Okay, and the second one, to show that the these non-perturbative effects are the most important effects in compactifications in Calabi-Yau fourfolds. Okay. So otherwise, that these fluxes, these background fluxes, when you're talking about compactification in Calabi-Yau fourfolds, these background fluxes do not solve this problem, and you have to go to non-perturbative physics. Or if you want even more stronger, three-level effects do not solve this problem. Okay. Yeah.
From the field theory point of view, it's known that, so say, in many scenarios you only give mass to the top, and then there are mechanisms that just use the top to give masses to all the other quarks. I'm wondering if that.
So you say to keep with the wrong one, and
yeah, this is, you know, it appears in many. It can be just solved, I think, at the field theory level.
Well, I had the idea that this was not working, but I don't know.
Would people tend to introduce some vector-like matter coupled to the top? That also coupled.
Okay, so you introduce extra stuff like new fields and.
Yeah, you need something, you know. That
okay, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think that anyone has explored that in this context, but
I'm wondering if that does have a field theory interpretation, what you're going to explain there. Yeah.
In terms of extra particles and so on?
It's a purely 10D or 8D effect that, you know.
Okay, maybe. Let me do it, and maybe you can tell me if, because I am highly unaware of these scenarios that you are.
Can you explain why just switching on each flux doesn't work? Because the original proposal was just to sweep a ground flux, right, and sweep all of this.
Yes.
So why doesn't it not?
Well, that's the idea of the talk. I don't want to focus my talk of why this is not working. Let me first focus on why this is working, and then as a corollary, we get why this is not working. Okay, it's a nicer approach in principle. It's more constructive than just trashing. Okay. Let me go briefly to a little bit of history. And then, well, the question is why I should look at non-perturbative effects at all. Well, and well, the thing is that actually this idea of solving round one problems came in a totally different context, which is these explains models. And the proposal was that Abel and Goodsell in a few years ago already, when this the instanton business with convexity in the finite world. Again, so the idea here is that in models of intersecting these experiments, you will have Yukawa couplings that are at three level in the sense that they come from Wolfschmidt instantons. So you have a boundary A, B, C, and here they are your particles, and they are connected by a Wolfschmidt instanton that gives you a Yukawa coupling. Now, this is what we will call a three level. And then what these people say is that you could have extra contribution coming from the same ADC D6 brain, but now you don't have a Wolfschmidt instanton here. You have a E2 brain, which is this. Okay, I have color chalk. have E2 brain, and then the worksheet instanton is just connecting the E2 brain and the D6 brain. Okay, so. And this, since we have not only worksheet instanton but B-brain instanton, would be a non-perturbative contribution from the point of view of the couplings in the 4D theory.
This is loop correction.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Actually, they gave a bunch of conditions for this to happen. One is the E2 is rigid, which we know well. Second one is O1, and the second one and is that there is no intersection with the MSSM D6 brains. So in this sense, it's different from the kind of instantons that Mirian, Ralph, and other people analyze in order to create neutrino masses, and sometimes you call couplings as well. Here, you are contributing to a Yukawa coupling that is not forbidden by global U1 symmetries of your low energy effective theory. It is allowed, but it just happens to be zero. And since it is zero, any perturbation is important, like this one. Usually you will neglect these kind of things. Okay, so the idea, if you want, is that you have a Yukawa coupling with a three-level piece and a non-perturbative piece that should come from this kind of diagram. And you can interpret this kind of diagram let me interpret it in the type 2B, which is closer to F theory. So the idea is that if you can implement this idea into F theory, and how does this person look like? Okay, the non-perturbative contribution to the Yukawa coupling. In order to do that, I'm not going to do F theory physics, I'm going to do type 2B, which is the closest in many senses, and then claim that all the elements are present in F theory. So, we look at type 2B in a warp Calabi-Yau and even with fluxes, like in the GKP scenario. And then, let's say in this kind of constructions, we have this internal six-dimensional manifold. We have these seven brains that are wrapping four cycles. Let me call it sigma 4. And then these three brains that are wrapping points. And then, of course, they are filling up 4D Minkowski. Okay? Good. The idea is that when you have a Gugino condensate in this theory, in the gauge theory comes from this D7 brain, this 4 cycle, you create a non-perturbative superpotential for, you induce a superpotential for these brain positions, as I think it was probably reviewed by Liam a few weeks ago. So the precise estimate is at 3 level. The gauge genetic function of this D7 looks like this, where this complexified Keller modulus is the real part is the volume, and the imaginary part is some axion coming from Ramon-Ramon fields. And then when you compute the threshold corrections that come from open string running in a loop and stretching between these two people, you get a contribution, you get a Fresco contribution that takes you to a function of both this and the D3 brain positions. Okay? So, so and then it comes from it that you have a Gugino condensate on T7, right? Then you create a superpotential for V3. Okay, so before the V3 had no superpotential at all, it's full of flat directions, but when you have some non-perturbative effects like a Gugino condensate on a T7 or an E3 instanton somewhere with the right number of zero modes, you will create this non-perturbative superpotential. Now, okay, so the good news is that this thing is quite computable compared to this type 2A setup. And actually, there are several ways to do it. Okay, we can compute from the one loop open string channel. Okay, this from this famous paper of Perhak course. And there's also Pavlov's talk on Friday that I believe he will do similar things in this open string channel, just basically running on the loop. And then there's the three-level dual closed channel. And here I refer to the computation of Raman et al. Four years ago, when we had the previous string phenom workshop. And then, well, I'm going to focus on this method because it's nicely, I mean, this is usually very exact, but it's hard to compute. But this can give you a very good idea for general Calabi-Yau's already what's going on. And, well, the basic idea of this method is that you have a D3 brain here, a D3 brain back reacts, and so depending on where the D3 brain is, here or here, you will have one war factor or the other. And as it also back reacts of the phi form, so you have one potential or the other. So these two functions are dependent. And when you want to compute this this quantity, this T sigma, you have to take into account that the U compactification is warp. You have a warp volume, and then you have a C4 that depends on the D3 brain position. And from this statement, you can rephrase this holomorphic field as a combination of as a function of this four-cycle modulus and the D3 brain position. Okay, the result that they get basically is of this form. They get the usual thing plus minus the logarithm of a function of evaluated at the point of where the B3 position is. And this function is nothing but the divisor function of Ganor that specifies where the non-perturbative effect is taking place. So this vanishes here. H equals 0 here and non-zero here. So which makes total sense, right? Because this, the H of this point is basically the distance between these two people and the mass of the particles running on the loop for the threshold correction. Good. Good. So why am I obsessed with this? Well, okay. First you have this result. And you can even generalize to non-abelian to a bunch of D3 brains, let's say n D3 brains, right? And then instead of you will have a trace here. This is a matrix. And then you can compute the superpotential by the usual formulas. one is the number of discerned brains in the Kichino Kon, see? And, well, you have some unknown functions of some complex function moduli. The usual instantonic suppression, and then the determinants. Okay, you get the superpotential that people have played with in models of cosmology, as probably Liam told you about. Now, the point here, I haven't done anything new so far, but what I'm going to do now is to replace this D3 brain by another D7 brain, by a D7 brain actually. Let's call it D7 brain prime, that is wrapping another 4 cycle. They don't touch, they don't intersect like in these assumptions here. And here, I'm going to put a non-trivial world volume flux, which is supersymmetric, and so F with F is different from 0. Okay? This instanton number. This instanton number is just telling me that I have a bunch of D3 brains in my living, diluted in my D7. And so, you would expect that since you have D3 brains living in here, if a D3 brain feels a force, well, the D7 brains also feels a force, right? Because it has within itself some D3 brains, and it's carried by the forces felt by the D3 brains. Okay? Okay, so so again, I have here a Gugino condensate, and here I have a induced D3 brain charge. Now, if I run this argument again of perturbing the Ward factor because I have some source for the Ward factor here, just because it is not zero, and as well the phi form, I can generalize this. I mean, first you will see that the position moduli of the D7 should also enter the corrections, the threshold correction for the D7 brain gauge coupling constant, just because they perturb the Ward factor. If you run the same kind of argument, you are led to the following expression. You just kind of replace this D7 by a N D3 smert over S4, and with a density which is, well, F with F. Okay? And then you get something the analogous to this quantity, would be something, I just dropped the N here for simplicity. For those who don't see, well, basically you just replace this here, that it's like integration over a delta function, with a with the density. Okay, so in the limit of D3 brain, this will become a delta function, and then you will recover that or this if you want.
But is the back reaction of the D7 brain not completely different from the back reaction of the D3 brain? Not just warped. I mean, it's
okay. Good. It's more than warping. No, no, you have a back reactive dilaton and F0 and so on. But you can see that the back reaction of the dilaton will not change the gauge coupling constant of this. And the F0 as well. Only if the D7 brain was also magnetized, which is one of the assumptions I'm taking, it's not magnetized. If the D7 brain was magnetized and then it had also D3 brains inside of it that depend on the axial dilaton, then it will be totally different because you will have two contributions. Let's say one coming from the back reaction of the D3s, one coming from the back reaction of the D7. And that will be far more complicated, and I'm not going into that, although one could try to do it. If this D7 is not magnetized, or if I have an O1 E3 brain, then only depends on the smeared D3 brain charge.
So the D7 brain without the gauge flux doesn't have any effect on the volume of the instanton.
Yes, yes, yes. That's what I'm saying.
But
yes.
Why do you say there's no gauge flux on that? I thought you're using that for a gap, no?
this is SCAT.
What is
GATT? I mean, there are 2 mini D7 brains in this thing, but this is GATT,
so
and this is...
Gajino condensations on a different brain.
Yes, exactly. Yes, you have one Gajino condensing and another with the GATT.
And eventually you want to replace this D7 Gajino condensation with E3?
With E3 you could do that. Oh. You could do that, yeah. I mean, this is what I'm doing here when I'm taking N equals to 1.
But sometimes in FTR you still have to put flux because of the Witten thing.
On O1 instantons you cannot put flux, no?
For O1 I think so.
Well, take it as an assumption if you want. I mean, in general, for Gajino condensate, you don't need to take F equals to 0, but I'm taking this simple model and I'm trying to mimic the Abel and Goodsell setup.
So you don't want that the 7 brains intersect because you want the distance to be finite, I guess.
I mean, you could have non-perturbative corrections in the intersect, but then it's tricky because you will have 0 modes that you have to integrate out. You have to compute this mass. It's more tricky. Like, this is much cleaner and everything depends on this distance.
But does that geometrically imply that they are in the same in a homological cycle?
Mm.
Because generically, I would have said that 2 different 4 cycles intersect.
Well, no, not really. I mean, imagine that you get one of these del peso that you blow up from a fractional D3 brain.
You can be counter examples, but they don't intersect.
You can keep them apart. Yeah, true.
So, okay, now that we have this expression that many of you cannot see, this is not very handy, so I can tailor expand on this expression. Let me do that. Okay, 1 hour. So the divisor function of, remember I have S GATT here. And here is coming the D7 with the Gajino condensing. Locally, this one will also have a divisor function, but locally, I can model S4 as at some complex coordinate vanishing, and I can Taylor expand around the fluctuation of this locus, right? This usual thing for D brains. What I get from this expression, this exponential, something like this. A first term, which is just the value of H on S4, which is constant. This is a constant term. And then second term that comes from the first derivative of this divisor function. That looks like symmetric trace of FHF. Okay, so I obtained this by just expanding this exponential and Taylor expanding this function. This is the constant, the zero mode. I mean, it's just the constant term. So this functional morphic is constant here, so you get a constant. But well, I just forget about it because a constant term is my superpotential. And here this theta. Well, I'm going to write it for you, but. Alpha prime, this famous function, the instanton suppression, and then something that depends on the B-level. Okay, and there will be more terms when you further Taylor expand. So the idea is that this will be the non-perturbative correction or the first non-perturbative correction to the superpotential. To this, you should add the tree level, which in this language would look like okay, and we're in this usual F theory language, so spreads like this. Okay, here, well, I'm using a slightly different language. This is not a 2,0 form like here, but I mean, it's the same thing. Okay? Okay, let me do the second recap. So we have computed the non-perturbative contribution to the piece of membrane, or the first relevant one, if you want. And the trick is that this non-perturbative contribution for D3 brains are easy to compute, and so since we have D3 brains instead of D7, we can carry on this computation to this case. It's important to notice that this non-perturbative contribution is different from zero if two things happen. One is that the induced distributed brain charge is different from zero, otherwise, as you say, there's no effect. And the second one is that the superpotential for D3 brains by themselves is different from zero. And from these two statements is where I'm going to show that the tree-level contribution is vanishing. But I'm not there yet. Actually, this statement, you can remove non-perturbative here, is more general. You can say that this deformation or extra contribution to this membrane superpotential of this form, okay, phi f squared, is different from zero if these two things happen. Have induced D3 brain charge and D3 brain suffer a square potential. Okay? It's just really straightforward thinking. D3 brains suffer some fate, so a bounded state of D3, D7 should suffer not the same fate because you have this thing, but their fates are related, if you want. Okay, well, is this clear? Oh, okay. So, well, and this brings me, this last statement that you could have this in general brings me to a more technical point, which many of you don't like, but I need it to close the discussion, which is the realm of beta deformations. So the statement is that this superpotential, let me write it again schematically, which is this superpotential can also be generated at tree level. Okay? There's no big theorem that forbids in general at tree level. But not for any background. Okay? You need to have you need to consider n equals 1 type 2B backgrounds such that D3 brains develop a superpotential, okay, at tree level. Otherwise, if this is happening at tree level, then you will have this piece at tree level. If it's happening non-perturbatively, you will have it non-perturbatively. So the examples are famous in the literature. These are this what is called the n equal 1 beta deformed backgrounds. Not to be confused with Alison and Unin, but the example here, for instance, is the n equals 1 deformations of ADS5 process 5 done by Rania and Polchinski 10 years ago. And then the same kind of deformation for the deformed conifolds. Done by Baumann et al. The same year. So in these backgrounds, which are local deformations and they have this the dual formulation in terms of giving a mass for the Coulomb branch of D3 brain, of course, you will get that D3 brains develop a superpotential non-trivial one and masses at three level. And this is related that you have an imaginary anti-cell dual D3, opa, D3 flux, 2.1, which is not what we have in this work Calavillo. Now, when we want to do more general than this, is where this thing of generalized complex geometry comes. And well, I'm not going to go into that, but let me just give a rough idea. So
we're doing now this by putting in flux for programming.
Yes, I am just creating the same kind.
Before you were doing
yes.
It via digital computation.
Exactly. So I'm doing a three level. Because, I mean, the claim in this paper is that things were happening at tree level. So I just want to see how you could do it at tree level, OK? So when you have a general Keller manifold, M6, that you want to deform to this by this beta deformation, so that D3 brains get a mass. What happens is that, well, the easier way to have an effective understand what's going on is to use the generalized complex geometry, and in particular to look at this, we have these polyforms that encode the geometry of the background, and in particular here the important one is one that is a sum of 1, 3, and 5 form. So when you have in the, let's say, warp Keller manifold and you didn't do anything and these brains don't have any superpotential, this thing looks like this. It's just a sandwiching of the two spinners that we are used from in we're used to in Keller compactifications and Calavillo compactifications. And when you beta deform this background, this guy picks up a piece. Now, this is globally well defined, and actually, this guy is globally well defined. So, this one form and three form, they are well defined, and actually, this is 1.0 well globally well defined one form, okay? One constant form, which is globally well defined. Now, if you impose this just by construction from the sandwiching of killing spinners, if you impose supersymmetry, well, you get that these usual equations is equals to zero, and then this implies that this one form is closed. So you have a 1.0 globally well-defined form that is closed, and if you wanna have this, you need a one cycle. I mean, if you want M6 to be compact, sorry, you need a one cycle, which is not the case in these local models, right? They are non-compact by nature. You want to do this ADS-CFT, but if you were trying to do some compactification for having this beta deformation that is in one-to-one correspondent for three-level three-level potential for these three planes, you need one cycle. So we cannot have them in Calabi-Yau three-folds, work Calabi-Yau three-folds, and so on.
See, now you're bootstrapping yourself. You're addressing some local couplings, right, from that theory motivation. Now you're invoking compactification and safe axis can change it.
Well, I'm doing local.
You base three folds.
But you don't have one cycles either. You don't have one cycles because it's come from a Calabi-Yau four fold.
I thought
elliptically fibered Calabi-Yau four folds, they don't induce any one cycle on the base, so you will never have that.
Why do you need this concept? I still don't understand it.
No, I'm just saying, okay.
You needed three.
Let me answer questions in order. So, first, Miriam, yes, I'm pushing this local picture and then I'm going global. But I mean, this local picture, the idea is that you can compute things locally. And you can compute things that are relevant for the gauge theory locally, but eventually you will embed it globally. And I have all this global potential embedding in mind, and that's why I'm trying to push here from a rather general discussion.
But this is not the appropriate embedding of the OFC models, right?
Am I
losing something?
This is.
What Calabi-Yau three-folds? Just explain why.
No, I'm not looking. This is Keller.
Telling us what is omega three.
Omega-3 is a sandwich of two spinners that you have in...
It's not holomorphic 3,0.
It is.
I'm just asking what... I don't know, you didn't define it. I don't understand.
Okay.
Omega-3 is a holomorphic 3-fold. It doesn't exist on a 3-fold base in Calabi-Yau 4-fold.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to be closed.
But you can have a closed 3-form, right?
It's
not holomorphic, maybe, but...
My understanding of what was done in that paper...
Okay, so your base is complex. Your base in... Yeah. But then this guy exists. I mean, this is just the...
Yeah, but it's not... It doesn't play the same role as Calabi-Yau.
But I don't need to play the same role.
Okay.
I just need this guy... I mean, I'm not even using this guy, look. I mean, I just need this guy to... I'm just explaining to you what happens when you get a... When you try to build compactifications where D3 brains develop superpotential at tree level. Okay?
But I thought that...
These are examples?
Yeah. I understand these examples. But I thought their mechanism was slightly different. I'm just trying to understand why you say what they say is not right.
Okay.
It's not criticizing anybody.
No, it's fine.
I thought that they have H flux, which is 1,2 mm-hmm. on a 3-fold base. And they use this flux, it's essentially like a Mayer's effect, no? Like you have...
Yeah, right.
You have
but okay, so what I'm saying, so what do you mean by 1,2? Because we all can play this game, right? You have a Calabi-Yau four-fold, and by the papers of Beckers, you know that what is allowed by supersymmetry is 2,2, and even if you want a big supersymmetry, you have something like 4,0, 0,4. Okay? Now you go back to the base. And this will transform in what I call a 2,1 G3. Now, if you change your conventions, it may be 1,2. Well, this is not doing shit.
That's the class of the flux they consider.
No, but this is not doing anything.
Why? What do you mean? That's precisely the flux they're considering.
Well, but yeah, that's wrong.
It's a B form which has two anti-holomorphic indices. It varies in the normal direction, and so it
Yeah. You can put it flowers if you want, but it's not doing anything.
Yeah, so
trust me.
Explain again why it doesn't do anything.
Because these three brains don't have any superpotential in this background. You understand? I cannot prove it yet because I didn't connect to what they did. So, but what I'm going to do now is going to take this superpotential and transform it into a non-commutative superpotential, which is what they work with. So you can see that you have a non-commutative superpotential, which is of the form, well, I don't know, this funny wedge product times F. You have this superpotential, which is what they work with, only if you have this. after doing a cyber with a map between these people. These are not the same, right? They have non-commutative variables. I take what they have, what they claim that they have. I do a cyber with a map, put the arrow here if you want, and I get this. And now I've been trying to convince you for this 1.5 hours that this piece only arises if these three brains in the same background develop non-trivial superpotential, which is not true by the Noether property of warp Kalabi-Yau's fourfolds. Am I going? Maybe I'm jumping here.
Probably but I lost you. I didn't.
Okay, good. Okay, so let's say I am Cecotti et al., four of them. And I come to you and I say, well, I have fluxes, blah, blah, blah. This happened, Myers effect, whatever, whatever. And I get to this superpotential. Mm-hmm. And they say, this solves the rank one problem. This is one of the claims of the paper. And very good. I have this superpotential. Now I am myself again. And I'm telling you this thing. I can do a cyber with a map of these fields, because I mean this is non-commutative. You should have a cyber with a map that takes you to variables that have usual gauge transformations, not non-commutative gauge transformations. And then I go back to the superpotential. I mean, I haven't showed you that, but it's on the paper. So you can just do the change of variable of Cyber-Witten, transform this phi hat into usual phi, f hat into usual f, and then you get the previous piece, the one that we were all happy with, and that gave you the rank one problem, plus some extra piece. Is that okay?
Does this piece allow infinite series?
Well, up to, okay, good. Up to order theta square, which is the usual. Let's stay here for the moment. is this okay? I mean, if you buy me that, then I can proceed. If you don't buy it, then okay.
I don't know what is that in that formula.
Okay, just believe me, okay? Because if not, then...
You can tell me, the starting from that formula, I can read off what is that.
This formula, you just do phi hat is phi plus blah, 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 change of variable is Cyber-Witten, and you get to here.
And it tells what that is.
And I get this.
And it's not zero.
And is a superpotential that is not the previous one. I mean, of course, it's a non-commutative deformation of the previous superpotential that was this one. You should get something else.
Okay.
And this is the something else.
Okay.
This something else, what I've been trying to push in all this talk is that it's only non-zero if the superpotential for these three brains is non-zero. Okay? Because you see this F squared means that your this membrane is magnetized. You have a non-trivial, how would I say? Basically, this theta is the superpotential for these three brains, if you want. If you have superpotential for these three brains equals to zero, this theta is zero.
Okay, why is there no superpotential for these three brains?
In GKP compactifications, there is no superpotential for these three brains. In Kalabi-Yau fourfolds, your M2 brains, which are in the three dimensions in M theory, they don't have any superpotential at three level. They are free to be placed anywhere.
But I thought you explained to us that when you have this,
when you have non-perturbative effects, this is no longer true. Good. But okay, good. At three level, I'm saying this is not happening. At non-perturbative level, yes, but then you have to know that, well, you have a non-perturbative suppression, right? I mean, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that this is not happening. I'm not saying this is not coming at three level. This is coming at the non-perturbative level that breaks the Noether structure, gives a superpotential for these three brains, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
Sometimes you're exclusive. I mean, many things are happening.
But it also stops being Kalabi-Yau.
Huh?
It also stops being Kalabi-Yau.
Well,
because this comes from the back reaction.
The back reaction of the instanton?
Yeah.
Well, that's up to interpretation. Let's not go there. Okay, I mean, yeah, you could. If you want to interpret this instanton effects in terms of some modified background, then you may go to this beta deform, blah, blah. Okay. Even if it's stop being, it will be a suppression, physical suppression from the instanton action.
But didn't you yourself explain to us your interpretive effect was equivalently captured by H flux, by the paper by Shamit and company, no?
But this is
equivalent then.
No, it's not equivalent because you see, I mean, okay, I delete it, but you see here, I have a e to the minus, no, okay, I cannot do like this. I got theta blah 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 e to the minus t. I mean, this is presumably small, or is it smaller than you would have if you have fluxes? I just was claiming that this is not happening at tree level. And I still claim it. If you say, well, I'm fine with a non-perturbative effect as well, then I am fine with you.
And also the precise resolution was given by paper by Shamit and company, and if you agree with that, then I'm completely fine. I thought you were saying there is really a problem, and it's a tension, but you're saying there's no tension, it's just coming from non-perturbative effect. I mean, this flux is generated by non-perturbative effect. That's what you're saying.
I am not saying this is what Bauman et al. Are saying, that they geometrize and they trade into fluxes.
It's flux and then it's kind of the same.
Okay. No? I have my reservations with respect to that because you see, when I told you about the, I mean, this is probably a solution, but I'm just curious about it if someone comes. I mean, they have an argument, but I never got it. So if you have a non-perturbative effect, at the beginning, when I gave you for the D3 brain, which is what they are doing, right? Looking at the D3 brain, you have something that is e to the minus t, and then determinant. What you get from this three-level superpotential coming from fluxes is not a determinant, you get a trace. Well, this may be there or not if you coming from the source is coming. This is not the same, it is for 1D3. Like for this Coulomb branch, whatever, yeah, probably. And well, if you expand the determinant, the first term is a trace. Yeah, fine. But. Well, I'm not totally sure if there are some subtleties here. And second thing is that this, as Ralph says, is not at all orders in the non-commutative parameter. It's just as first order. But when people do this F-theory phenomenology, try to get a hierarchy of rank, or hierarchy of flavors coming from this perturbed Yukawa matrix, they get something that they are orders like this. I don't know. I mean, you go beyond first order in theta. So it's not clear to me that these two things are the same when you go beyond first order in theta. I just can't prove this equivalence to first order in theta. I don't know what's going on afterwards. Okay, so I try, but I don't see any obvious way of reproducing the higher order terms in the Moyle product that comes from here by these kind of things. Maybe there's something, but I just didn't manage. So yeah, for some aspects like what Shamit et al. Are doing, these subtleties, they are not relevant. But for this F-theory business, that could be. And well, and as I have been jumping over the last part of the talk, I think I'm basically done.
One part I don't understand. So what the flux would say if you find a non-supersymmetric flux, you need to show a free mechanism would work, right?
Yes.
If you break supersymmetry.
Yes.
But if you have your instance, there's so much structure. I think you also write it down. You just get also this sort of naked e to the minus t piece in your superpotential, which gives you runaway behavior. So, which might also eventually lead to supersymmetry breaking. So isn't
yeah 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 yeah
saying that you need Suzy breaking in order to get this effect?
Well, I mean, but then. But then many things can happen, right? This by itself, you may break supersymmetry if you have combined effects or
consistent. Then, I mean,
so you're happy with the fact that you're breaking
supersymmetry. Either of
well, yeah, but increasing the rank of the Yukawa matrix while breaking supersymmetry is not the best thing to do.
Okay.
Mm.
But you can't do it in a pure supersymmetry control.
I mean, okay, remember that I'm a very specific theory setup that was pushed because of this other one top, and then... No. I'm saying that I'm not fully trashing things. Just for this scenario that was pushed at some point, well, there's some issues here, okay? Maybe in some other, well, you don't have them, or you have one, it's fine. Find better flavor hierarchies from another scenario.
Any more questions or concerns?
So if in principle you push your arguments all the way, it's not only that those effects would be exponentially suppressed, but also I think if you naively do it, it would still keep the rank of the matrix. Because, you know, you have to make place further.
Well, no, I mean, you would...
No,
you
rank would be broken, right? It wouldn't be rank one anymore.
Yes.
But here one plays further game, you know, with the powers of thetas, right? Covering the whole rank three matrix.
Yeah, okay, so but my statement is here, I don't know what's going on from the non-perturbative point. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's zero. I don't know what is going on. Probably would arise, but I don't know if the same thing as the non-commutative deformation. I really do not know.
Okay, so, further questions?